From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
If you're one of our regular listeners, you'll know that on Thursday nights, we go live to air on Edge Radio and talk about board games, card games, tabletop games, role-playing games, all sorts of fun and games.
Yes, that's right, because we are the Dice Men Cometh.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's episode 109 on the 10th of March, but we don't generally talk about US politics, do we?
No.
Because a lot of people in America right now, I think they're pulling their hair out about what's going to happen in the US presidential election. Probably everyone's actually pulling their hair out except Donald Trump, perhaps, because he just takes his off and on.
Yes.
That's probably about all we're going to say about American politics at this stage, because we're going to talk about board games and other stuff, Leon and Garth.
Yeah.
Mark. I'm here. I'm just on painkillers.
That's all right. Well, let's get straight to it. We are going to go through not one, not two, but three what we have been playing this week, because we have been playing all the games, which is great. One of the games that we're going to talk about is going to lead us into a lovely conversation, because that's what we want to do. We want to talk about this game and a few other bits and pieces. We're going to obviously talk about our competition, because we have got an end date for it, and I'm sure people would like to know what that is. And then, because it's been a little while, we're going to have to recap our last few sessions of Pandemic Legacy. So we'll leave that to the end so that we can release two episodes of this with or without spoilers, but we're going to catch up on April, May, and a teaser, a little bit of June.
Oh, yeah. All that, lost my voice, all that and a lot more on Edge Radio 99.3 FM and Language Warning. A song all about the worst players in games because they fuck you over. Reverse Language Warning. You're with Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Garth and Leon and myself, Mark, here to talk about what we've been playing.
I think what we're going to have to do is wash that mouth out with soap, Mark. That was disgusting.
The amount of times I've had to think, no, I'm the young one, I'm the metalhead around here, all the songs I bring and make sure they're relatively nice, Leon, and then he just goes and does that well.
Yeah.
Things are going to change around here.
that was the Edge Radio machine gave us that song. What can I do?
Yeah. Anyway, stop living in the past, guys. We are going to talk about one of many games that we have played this week. And I need to start by saying a massive shout out to GMT Games.
Woo!
Because they were very, very kind and supplied us with this game for zero monies so that we could review it and let all of our wonderful people know all about it. We are, of course, talking about Thunder Alley. Alley, are you ready for fun?
I think it's just called Thunder Alley.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Now, Thunder Alley, as you may have guessed, is a game that is explicitly not about NASCAR racing in America.
No, not at all.
But it is about something that takes a remarkable similarity to NASCAR and transfers it into the board game space. Now, this is a game that originally came out in 2014. It was designed by Jeff and Carla Hauger, and as I say, published by GMT. It plays between 2 and 7 players. So this has a very, very broad spectrum of potential players, which means that it's not just about Mark and his one friend or Leon and all of his friends. It's about me, who has various numbers of friends.
2 to 7 friends?
Exactly right. Well, I only need 1 to 6, because I'm the other person. Now, it does play in about an hour and a half once you have figured it out, because it did take us a little bit longer because A, we're thick, and B, it was a learning game for everyone at the table.
And everyone was drinking.
And everyone was, and that is a lot to do with the elephant who's not in the room anymore, bringing a backpack martini stand, basically, and making Negronis, which was awesome because normally when you're going racing, you're drinking watered-down beer or you're spilling stuff on your shoes, yeah. So it's not nearly as elegant as our evening certainly was.
And I should point out that I wasn't drinking, so everyone got home safe, don't you worry. Oh, I actually got pulled over by the cops on the way home.
Oh, really?
I forgot to tell you, lads, I've never been pulled over by the cops before. And I was all excited, and they were just like, hang on. this young kid, tattoos,
yep.
2 a.m, he's all excited, what's going on here? And I just said, I just don't drink, and I've never been breathed before, this is great. And they breathed me and went, oh, he's right. All right, fair enough, so yeah.
There should be a game about that.
So yeah. You were all excited because you'd been playing a high-octane racing game.
Exactly. So what is it, I hear you ask? Because I know you two know, but there's plenty of people who don't. So it is a stock car racing game for between 2 and 7 players. It has the feel and the flexibility of car-driven simulation, because what you've got to keep in mind whenever I'm explaining this is we're talking GMT games. And that is a big parenthesis, I guess, around this whole thing, is that it's so unlike a game that you would expect GMT to send out. So this is what makes it really interesting for me personally. So it has a whole bunch of different mechanics using that card-driven, I guess, simulation or the mechanic that you've got. You will be drafting cards. You'll have teamwork because you are not purely controlling a car. You are controlling your team of cars, and that number of cars will vary depending on how many players are actually sitting around at the table. Now, we played with 5 players, and that meant that we were each controlling 3 cars. So we were in our own little racing team, Team Garth, Team Mark.
Team Pockets!
Yeah, exactly right. But you're controlling all the cars in your team, and you've got to try and do everything you can to get all those cars across the line. It's not just about being first. It's about getting your team across, because all the cars get points. Number 1 gets around 42 points, but number 15 still gets 20 points or something. Mm. So it's not just about focusing and putting all of your car eggs in one car basket. So you will be going around now with the base game, which is heavy. It is a big, solid box that is full of cardboard. It comes with 2 double-sided boards.
Double-sided board technology,
so you
we
get
love
4
that.
4 racetracks. Now, each of these tracks, because it is a game where you'll be sort of moving your cards square by square, they've got different width tracks. So some of them might only have 2 or 3 squares wide for the track. Some of them will have 4 or 5. They've got different length tracks, which makes the strategy slightly different in every situation. They've also got the inner ring, which is your pits, which will become very, very important as the race progresses. But the way it works is relatively simply for a GMT game, because you're going to start by drawing up to your hand limit, which is always the number of cars you start with plus 1. You're then going to, starting with the first player, and the first player is whoever is winning the race, of course. They will play one of their action cards to activate one of their cars, and you go round the table until everyone has had a chance to activate each of their cards. Now, the cards are obviously the major focus of this game, and they're divided up into a few different styles of movement for your cars. So the first one, which is the simplest to explain, is solo movement, where you will play your card. It will say you are allowed to move X number of squares, which are movement points, and all you do is you choose your card and you move, and that's pretty much it.
Clean air, baby.
Exactly right. So you're allowed to move left or right. You obviously can't go backwards because that's stupid, but you are allowed to bump into cars. If you try and push another car out of the way, that's using a couple of movement points. Mm. If you want to try and push things out of the way in front of you, that's a couple of extra movement points. Solo movement's pretty easy. When you get into the other styles of movement, so for example, pursuit movement, that is another one altogether. So you've got pursuit and you've also got lead movement. Now, this is the ones that personally I find a lot more interesting, because lead movement essentially means you're going to be sucking all the cars that are immediately behind your car forward along for the ride. So you can't just be focusing on your one car. You've also got to be focusing on all the cars for the, more often than not, rival teams, unless you've really planned it well, Carl, who had all 3 of his in a row. But you're going to drag them all along with you, and they're just moving for free. So a couple of times while we were playing, there were cars that were in the first, second or third spot that hadn't even been activated yet because they'd just been sucked along with lead movement. And then you've got pursuit movement, which is exactly the same thing, but you're essentially pushing the cars in front of you. And I think that was a really interesting mechanic, because a lot of the time in these games, all you're focusing on is your team, your couple of cars, and you can't do that in this game.
Yeah, I think that opened the game right up for me at the start because I was thinking, okay, I've got three cards to play, three cards to use, you know, blah, blah, blah. But what made it really interesting was the strategy of, okay, who am I going to suck along? Who's potentially going to suck me along? And not just get as far in front as I can, but get in front with people behind me to give a better chance of pulling me along, get my cars close together. As you said, Garth, Carl did a really great job of keeping his cars nice and tight together, and it worked for a long, long time. Whereas for a while, I was way out in front, and then all of a sudden, I was at the back of the pack. I don't know quite how it happened, but it really gave a lot of variety with the movement. Whereas I think, you know, if you compare it to like a Formula D or something, you're basically just moving your one car. With that one, it's the luck of the dice. This one, you've got the luck of the cards, where the cards have got different movement points on them. But it's also about that strategic and tactical play of where do I sit on the track? Who's going to be behind me? What are they going to do? Can I get them to move before I move to get an advantage? I really liked it. I really liked it, actually.
Yeah, and the other part of these cards, the vast majority of them also have what's called the spotter's ability, which is a little bit of flavor text on there. But essentially, it means your car has to adhere to certain rules. So there might be a card that says you can move 7 movement, but at the end of your turn, you've got to go one lane further towards the outside of the track or the inside of the track, or you have to end up in this sort of position. The other thing that happens with most of the cards is that to play them, you've also got to then inflict some form of damage or wear and tear on your car. Now, your car can only ever have a maximum of 6 points of wear and tear. As soon as it gets 6, it's out of the race. It's involuntarily retired. But as soon as it gets 3 pieces of wear on it, you're then losing 3 pieces three movement spaces if it's 3 damage, 4 if it's 4, 5 if it's 5, which basically is almost you playing that card for nothing, which is where the pits become a really important part of this game, because there are these awesome little double-sided card chits, I guess, that have different background colours so you can tell which ones have been activated or not. But at the end of the round, once everyone's gone, you then get to choose which cars, if any, am I going to put into the pits. And they'll move on to the most inner ring of the track. They'll then move 5 spaces back, but they'll then be able to get rid of all of their temporary wear and tear, because there's the temporary one which can go, and then there's permanent one, which is essentially you've been working your car too hard and there's no way you're going to get rid of it. But I think it just makes really interesting, especially during the second half of this game, where almost every car you've got is some damage. There's some damage in some way, shape, or form. It makes every one of those decisions that little bit more tactical, and it certainly adds to the flavour of this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I don't know if you're about to talk about it, Garth, but I'll cut you off. The event card. So at the end of every round, you've got an event card. Mm-hmm. The event cards had various different things that happen, sometimes to everyone, sometimes to only a couple of cars. And then often they had a condition to do with the colour of a flag. Now, if you follow car racing, you'll know there's yellow flags, green flags, and red flags, not in that order, where green flag means basically look out but keep racing. Yellow flags is basically they do a restart where basically everyone forms back up again in the positions that they're in, and basically the race sort of starts again. Really great catch-up mechanic, because particularly one time where I think two of my three cards were way, way back, all of a sudden we had a yellow flag event, and I get to catch up again, and I get to get redrafting, because, of course, once you fall way back, there's no one to draft you or push you. So the yellow flag sort of saved me there. And then there is a couple of the red flag events where basically, I think when the second red flag came out, basically the game finished early. It was like a crisis crash.
Well, it's usually heavy rain or some extreme weather condition normally is the case.
Yeah, so that in itself gave a lot of variability. It didn't feel too much like crazy luck, because it sort of, in most cases, everyone got affected. I mean, we had one card which was a collision, and it basically affected like the front few cars or the front couple of cars.
More specifically, me.
Yes.
like the other one as well, which forced a car to be retired, and that was purely because I had the most wear markers of one particular type. So one of my cars blew an engine or whatever it was thematically, and it was out of the race. So I immediately took the last place, got some points for that, but my car was out of the race for the next lap and a half.
Look, I had a lot of fun with this game, not just because I won. Yes!
Because
got the checkered flag. Oh, in fact, I didn't even get the checkered flag. That was the thing. I think I had one of my cars came third, one of my cars came fourth, and one of them came a few more places back. But because of my team points, I got the victory. Was I think, did Carl cross the line first and then...
Yes, he crossed the line. I think he got first and then a few others after that.
Yeah.
Both me and Carl could have won it, but we just didn't do things properly.
Yeah, so look, you know, let's get it out there. This is GMT Games. Obviously well known for Twilight Struggle... a couple
series.
Of my favourites, you know, Here I Stand and Virgin Queen. These heavy war games where chits and these card-driven tactics, movement points, action points, those sort of things, they work really well. Now, when I saw this game, I didn't really know what to think because it's like it's a car racing game, but it's got these things in it. I have to say I really enjoyed it. Now, I don't know if I'd play it a lot of times, but I certainly enjoyed it. And to me, those things, the chits, the cards, the way it worked, didn't put me off. But then again, I'm quite used to playing those cards. Now, Leon,
yes,
you had a bit of a different opinion, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Now, before I slag this game off, which I'm going to, I must admit, though, I did end up enjoying it, but the situation we were in with all of us, and we were just all having a good old chat and good old time anyway, so you've got to take that into effect anyway. We could have been playing a rubbish game, we probably still would have had a good night. Not saying this is a rubbish game, because it's certainly not. Compared to, say, Formula D, which a lot of people would, it beats the hell out of that game. I think that game is rubbish compared to this. But I've certainly got some issues, and I'm certainly going to raise them right now. The first one is...
you've got notes, oh my God.
I do. The box itself is very, very bland. You can't deny that it's very, very bland. And the fact that this game retails for quite a bit of money, it's one of those things that some people could look at it and kind of go, what's that? I don't really know. And then see the price. And then that alone could push them away from it. Not saying it has to be all flashy and cartoony. Not every game has to be like that. But the fact of the matter is that this is a consumer day and age. That so something like that, I think, yeah, just from the look of that box, I'd never pick that up and go, because the theme alone is a hard sell anyway to a lot of people.
I agree. I know you've got plenty more to say, Leon, but yeah, it comes under the category of, for me, good game, tough theme, for that very, very reason, because it's only going to attract a certain clientele at the best of times. I think once you open the box and if you're a gamer, you will appreciate what it has. But even so, I like car racing. I like sitting down and watching the Bathurst in October. That's a lot of fun. But even so, would I purchase this game?
Yeah.
When there's so much other stuff out there that I can bank on, I don't know.
That's the thing. We're not saying necessarily that it's bad, even though I'd say the box art I would say is bad. The fact you've got to look at it, something like, say, a Formula D. If this had box art like a Formula D, it'd probably sell twice as many copies on that alone. So that, and this is a business, and this is a good game. We want people to play a game that is good because of the mechanics, and stuff like that is really kind of annoying. On this, another thing that's in the same type of vein is the little cars themselves. Now, I will get accused of just being, oh, you're young, you love your miniatures and whatnot, but I can't take away from the fact that the little cars, if they were little miniature cars, not even the greatest designed one in the world, just little miniature cars, I think would have made it so much more better. The imagination of it, and I just think it would have improved the game a lot, lot more.
See, I disagree. I think they look really, really cool, and I think the fact that the double-sided background of them where you can quite easily tell which cars you've activated and which ones you haven't for that round... I get your point. I think bringing a 3D nature to it would make it pop a lot more.
Yeah.
It would certainly take a lot more space up in the box, which I don't know if there's any room left in it. It's not a make or break for me.
Yeah, I know. But as you said, I said the thing, if there was pictures on the back of like little cars as well, it'd probably sell more copies. And the game, these guys like GMT, they do some perler of games that people sometimes have been put off by certain componentry things. We want them to sell as much as they can. And as you said, with like the... you can turn the cars over because you need to be black one side and white the other. The other night we were talking about that. We came up with an idea of putting cards on the your own personal playmat and stuff. We came up with that idea in 5 seconds. I'm sure GMT could come up with a better segment than that. But anyway, so that was one of them. The cards themselves are relatively bland, but that's not that big a deal because, you know, they're bland. The board itself is, again, a little bit bland.
It's a racetrack. Yeah, looking down at it, it's as if you're in the blimp on front of and top of a racetrack on race day.
All right. Relax. The collision card that we talked about, we can't go away from the fact that we looked at that collision card for 20 minutes trying to figure out what it actually meant and how it was going to work,
yep.
Which was not ideal. There's only one collision card in that whole deck.
Yes.
A lot of people, I don't want to say a lot of people, people that are really into racing don't watch it for the crashes, obviously.
I do.
People that half-assedly watch racings definitely watch it for the crashing. So it's a kind of thing that I think could have been in there a bit more or just done a bit differently. Another thing is that I'm trying to remember off the top. Oh, the catch-up mechanic that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Double-edged sword. It worked for all of us because we were all relatively close most of the time. There was times where maybe someone was... I know when I first started, I was a bit at the back. So when we had the first catch-up, I was like, woo, that's a cool idea. But you can't take away from the fact that if somebody was playing this and doing really, really well and they were forced to then everyone catch up to them, it's going to take away from that person that was doing really well.
My direct counter to that is that's how it is.
That's racing.
That's exactly how racing is.
Since I know nothing about any type of sport or racing or anything, and you guys said, no, that happens in real life racing, I think it's a ridiculous thing to happen in real life then, let alone in the game. So, yeah, like the thing, they're all tiny little things, but I did end up enjoying it in the end, and I would like to try it again now that I know the game a bit more. And, yeah, so a few little fiddly rules and whatever else, but that you're going to expect with a bigger game.
Yeah, well, look, I wondered, you know, there's two boards, these and GMT, fantastic quality boards, great big thick boards, which add to the weight of the game, which probably add to the expense as well and the production costs. But two boards, but the tracks themselves, they're not that different. And I know this is not Formula One racing where you've got lots of chicanes and loops and all that sort of stuff. I mean, in NASCAR, you go round and you go round and you go round.
This isn't
the tracks
NASCAR.
Are round. No, of
it's
course not.
It's not NASCAR.
So for me, I sort of thought like, well, either just have the one board. Yes, it's nice to have a different shape, but I don't think it would change much about how the game played.
Well, I disagree because there are boards that are only too wide. And when you've got 15 cars, in our cases, trying to get past and expending extra movement points to try and push cars out of the way or to try and bump things in front of them, I think you'd notice it quite a marked difference.
Okay. Well, maybe next time we play, we need to play with that particular board. The component quality didn't put me off at all. I really enjoyed it. I do like GMT games. Great quality stuff. So, look, I would hardly recommend if people have, as you said, Garth, a sort of a slight interest in car racing and are into the GMT-type games, they should definitely give this one a try.
Yeah, because it plays really quick for a GMT game.
Yeah.
And what we did, which we haven't talked about yet, is we had a timer because this is a race game. It's not about a long strategy Twilight Struggle game. We had a timer and we made the decision that every turn you take has to be done within a minute. That was it. And we did it. We played the whole race using that confines. Not really did we have any issues with that at all. So, look, I think that was a great way. I would like to see a little timer come with this game because I think that would make it pop in terms of
speed. It does
speed.
Give that. It does give that feeling of urgency which you want with a racing game, that's for sure.
I tell you what, take out one of the boards, bit more better components, put in that little timer and a better looking box, you're on a winner.
Speaking of winners, these winners in the studio here are going to be back in a few moments.
That was Sucker for Punishment by Born Lion on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Man Cometh. Now, gentlemen, after we had our little racing car shenanigans and the drinks were flowing even more, we played yet another game, didn't we?
We did, I think.
Yeah, I'm not shocked that if any of you couldn't remember this, it wouldn't surprise me at all. We very, very quickly went through a game called Deception Murder in Hong Kong.
Hey, I've seen a video about that.
Have you?
Yeah.
Was it really, really good?
Yes, it was, in fact.
I like to stop and, am I going to say? Yes, I'm going to say it's good. Yes, it is one of the
Is it a Vassal one?
No. I mean, he probably did it and he probably did it better, but it's not. No, this is one of the first games I did one of our 1 minute reviews for, which we'll probably talk about sometime soon in greater length, but yes. So Murder in Hong Kong by Grey Fox Games is a deduction and deception game for 4 to 12 players.
What?
That can be played and taught within like 15 minutes or so.
Even to drunks.
Yes, even to drunks, as I can attest to. It was originally called CS Files, or Crime Scene Files, by our Chinese publisher Jolly Thinker Games. So in the game, players take the role of investigators attempting to solve a murder case. But there's a twist. The killer is one of the investigators. So each player receives a role card at the start of the game. They're either going to be the investigators trying to solve it, the murderer themselves trying to get away with it, or the forensic scientist. Now, what the forensic scientist does is they're kind of the leader of the game. As soon as you find out you're the forensic scientist, you flip over your card to say, I'm the forensic scientist, and then we go from there. The murderer keeps to himself, and so do the investigators. Everyone in front of them has two lots of four different cards, and one of the four cards, is a possible murder weapon. The other four cards are possible bits of key evidence that were left behind during the murder. So what will then happen? The forensic scientist will tell everyone to close their eyes, and then they will ask the murderer to open their eyes, and then ask the murderer to point out their murder weapon that they used, and then a bit of evidence. And then everyone else will close their eyes again, and then everyone will open their eyes. So the forensic scientist knows what's happened, but no one else. And then from this point on, the forensic scientist says not a word. So I kind of got that Mysterium vibe to it, where he just says absolutely nothing from there on in. And as you've probably gathered already, it's kind of a Resistance-y type of vibe as well. Very, very similar to those two games. Also mixed with another game, Concept, and you're about to find out why. Because the way that the forensic scientist will help everybody else solve this murder is these boards in front of them. One of them has the method used that... what's it called? Help me. The method of death... I've lost
not the motive, the murder weapon.
No, wow, this is brilliant radio.
Modus operandi.
Yeah, either the way somebody died, either by poisoning or blood loss or severe injury or that kind of stuff. That board is always in the middle of the field. Then there'll also be a location. There are four different ones of these cards. One gets turned over randomly at the start of it, and then there are four other boards that come from a stack of about 40 or so, that have things like the weather condition, the time of day, what the victim was feeling at the time, heaps of different types of things. And each of these boards will have five or six different words on them, like the location will have, say, kitchen or toilet or restaurant or library. The forensic scientist then has these six cool little bullet tokens in front of them, and that they will use those bullet tokens to place them onto these boards, trying to build the murder scene based off what they've been told by the murderer. Based off they've been told it was the lead pipe and the thing left around was a teddy bear. And then all you've got to do is try to figure out some sort of fictional way that you can link those two together. So people can start, say, you put down severe injury was the cause of death. Cause of death! That's what I was looking for. Well done, me. And then everyone starts looking at everybody's cards on the table because everybody's a suspect because they don't know. And they'll just like look and say, like, well, Mark has three cards that could have been a severe injury. Garth has two, someone else has three or four, whatever. And then as the forensic scientist puts out more bits of information, you kind of narrow down and start to build this scenario in your own head of what it could possibly be. So we keep going about that, and everyone has this little badge token that they can throw in at any point and say, right, I think the murderer was Mark, and I think it was the lead pipe, and the bit that was left behind was a keyboard. And then the forensic scientist has to say simply, yes, and then the investigators all win and the murderer doesn't. Or they say no, and the game keeps going. They don't tell them, you got one right out of the two, they don't say a word. All they say is yes or no. And then after a while, when all the bullet tokens are out on these six different boards, the forensic scientist can take away one of the boards that they feel isn't really helping the situation and add a new one and put a new bullet token on that. They do that a couple of times, and it kind of goes back and forth. It's a very casual type of party-style game to it. And then it keeps going until the murderer has either got away with it scot-free or we find the bugger.
Exactly right. And the great thing is this game only takes about 15 to 20 minutes to play, so it is a good little start of night, end of night, in between bigger games kind of game. And because it is that party social deduction kind of thing, it's a great game for all larger groups sitting around the table as well, because it just ticks so many of those boxes.
And it can play up to 12, and it's one of those type of games like your Resistance or your Coup that I think you could base an entire night around this if you had everyone that was really into it and kind of, I think it'd be really good.
Well, firstly, I think they missed a huge opportunity, because apart from calling it Mystery Resistance Concept, they could have called it CSI Hong Kong. The name just doesn't, deception, murdering Hong Kong. Any game that has a colon in it It just doesn't flow.
I think it's fine because the kind of there's Chinese writing on each of the things.
Path fine.
Oh, I like. I really like the Hong Kong the Hong Kong theme, the Hong Kong theme,
and some of the specific bits of evidence and the kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It does have that sort of Chinese or Asian theme.
Yeah.
I like that. I just don't like the name. I think they could have done a lot better with the name. I really like the bullets.
Yeah.
They look great. Some of the boards I found are so abstract and obscure that I think they could have done better with that. But it plays really quickly.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's interesting. It's a great beginning of the night, end of the night, get the grouping going. It'd be a great icebreaker, I reckon. It really fits that mold well.
Yeah, look, we played this a couple of times,
yep.
And I was lucky enough to be the forensic investigator, the murderer, and a witness, so I was able to get a good glimpse of it from the three main roles. It's really hard when there's so much variation. You just can't control it. And when those six boards come out and they say, what was the time of day, and it has no bearing to the evidence that you've placed out, they're kind of redundant. So there is a rule where you can switch them around and change evidence at some point, which is great. Look, I think it's great. I would much rather play Mysterium for an hour and a half, 2 hours than play three or four versions of this, I must admit. I would much rather that game. But it fills a nice little niche. And to have those varying concepts like coup and resistance and concept and what have you into a relatively small box, you can see why it's done all right.
Yeah. But as you said before, some of those boards could be absolute nonsense in certain combinations, but they could be the exact thing you need in another combination,
correct,
which
yeah.
adds to the replayability. Also, before we finish up on it, there are two other roles that you can add into it, and they're very similar to roles from the resistance-y type of world. One is the accomplice, who knows who the murderer is as well, and their job is to kind of push people away from the murderer because they will then win if the murderer does.
Yeah.
The next one is the witness. The witness knows who the murderer and the accomplice is, but they don't know which one is which.
Okay.
They know one of them is, but they're unsure. And at the end of the game, if the murderer has been caught, if they can identify who the witness was, then they get away with it, which I think is very similar to, in Resistance, Avalon, I want to say Merlin
or someone like that.
Yeah,
someone like that. So it's definitely got similarities to those games. And since Resistance, Concept, and Mysterium are all massive games, anyone who's had a look at them, I think would... There's a lot of people after this game at the moment. It's only just come from Kickstarter. So once it gets into wider distribution, I think it's probably going to go gangbusters.
Fantastic. Look, we have been playing so many games, we're going to come back and talk about even more shortly.
That was After You're Gone by Alex G. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, for our third game that we are going to talk about this week, I'll have to hand it over to Mark.
Oh, thank you, Garth. Now we're going to talk about Circus Floccati by the good Dr. Rainer Knizia. Now, firstly, let me tell you a little bit about German games.
Yeah?
This was a German game from originally published in 1998 by Abacus Spieler. Now, one of the things about German games, particularly early German games, is they seem to think that you always had to have some sort of a pun in the name. And you see it with so many games like Bonanza, where it's a joke about beans and the German word for bean is Bonn. So the German word for flea, that itchy thing, is flo.
Ah, of course.
And a floccati is actually a Greek word, believe it or not, for a shaggy woolen rug. So what better place to keep your fleas than in a shaggy woolen rug?
I actually like that.
And if you have fleas, what could you do with them? You could turn them into a flea circus. So Circus Floccati is ostensibly about a flea circus. But really, it's a card game about numbers, because let's face it, that's what Dr. Rainer Knizia does. He's not a medical doctor. He's a doctor of mathematics, and that's what he does. So now, as I said, this was originally produced in 1998. This version that we have, very graciously sent to us by Grail Games, a fantastic little Australian company. They've been putting out their Mike line of small box games, and this is number 5 in the Mike line. So I said originally it was produced by Amigo Spieler. It plays 2 to 5 players, playing time about 15 minutes, and it's a card drawing, push your luck, set collection type of game. Now, what you're doing in this game is you're drawing cards. They've got the numbers between 0 and 7, and there are 10 different colours. What you're doing is you're trying to assemble sets of 3 of the same colour. No, number. Same number. Or you're trying to get together, and I can't remember what the name for it is, but you're trying to get together a whole big group of one of every colour. If you do that, that ends the game, or otherwise the game ends when the draw deck comes out. Now,
gala show.
Yeah, that's right. So if you put down a trio, which is the 3 cards of the same number, you score 10 points per trio. If you put down the gala show, which, as I said, is one card of each of the 10 colours, you add up all the numbers on the cards. Now, remembering they're from 0 up to 7.
And 10 bonus points.
Oh, and then you get 10 bonus points. But you potentially can get a lot of points from putting down that gala show. Now, when the game ends, you also get points for the highest card of each colour that you've got in your hand. So there's this sort of dilemma, and I guess this is... I don't know if it's one of the interesting decisions or just the interesting decision in this game where, you know, do you go for the trios, put your cards down and get the 10 points, or do you all out try and get all the high number cards and make the set of 10?
Yes, because I would say it is one of the interesting decisions that you make, because the other one that you will make is as you're drawing cards from the top of the deck, because there is just the one central deck.
Yeah.
And the way that works is that you can keep drawing cards to then put them face up on the table. But as soon as you draw a card of the same colour that's already out, that's the end of your go.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
On your go, you're trying to draw a card. You will be able to draw any of the cards that are from the face-up pile, or you can draw cards off the top of the discard pile, hopefully looking for the one that you want.
Yeah.
But as soon as you get that one of the same colour that's already there, play it to the left.
Yeah, so that push your luck element. And look, a couple more interesting things about this game. So the art of this version is by Heiko Gunter. Now, I didn't realise that I knew Heiko Gunter, or at least I knew his art. He was the artist who did the black box edition of Glory to Rome.
Wow.
Okay, and interestingly about that, he did that off his own bat, and then that game company then picked that up and did a Kickstarter with his art. If you want to see a bit more of this, the art in this game, we'll come back and talk to it in a bit more, but some of Heiko's art, he's got a geek list that's called Heiko's Not Very Secret Redesign Addiction, and he's made redesigns of Bonanza, the bean game I mentioned today, but Advanced Civilization, Dune, and even Puerto Rico. And some of these you can download as a print and play. Some of these, I must admit, look absolutely amazing, like really transform the original game. Now, the art in this game, I don't know. It's very, it's that, what was that Cole's picture book, which sort of takes you back to the 1920s and 1930s sort of look. It's sort of a cross between that and hipster art, where you basically got human bodies with flea heads. Now, of course, all the fleas are circus performers. So you've got acrobats and magicians and strong fleas and all this sort of stuff. So you've got your flea art. I really enjoyed the art. You've also got your background colours, which are there's 10 different colours. And I must say, on behalf of Tanya, our art expert, when she played this, there were a couple of colours that they didn't pop. And you were a little bit confused as, is that red or is that orange?
Yeah, I agree.
The colour choice.
Well, also because they're not just block background colours. Look, for example, the blue colour, the main dark blue colour, starts as dark blue out in the corners but makes its way to lighter blue on the middle. So, yeah, I can understand where that happened. I know in the couple of the times when I was playing it, you had to do a double or a triple take just to make sure. You almost had to want to put your card of hands out onto the table to see, is that really that right colour of puce that I need or not?
Yeah, especially if you're going to try to get the gala to try and end the game, because you've got to have 10 cards in your hand, which is already a big, hefty hand of cards to have. And there's, as you said, especially with the blue, there's 3 different kinds of blue in this game as well. So that's one of the issues.
Now, before we go on and talk about this game a little bit more, let me read you a little bit of a Board Game Geek review. I would say that I would say that Circus Flaccati should be in any collection of casual or family gamers. Likewise, any serious gamer that likes to have lighter fillers around should have a copy on hand. I am just amazed how the designer pulled off a game with such simple rules and gameplay that provides such fun elements as press your luck, great decision-making, memory, and enough luck to keep it light and interesting. I own over 100 board and card games, and this is certainly among my favourites. That was BGG user Maxar. Now, that review was posted in 2007, and I think, well, we're going to have a bit more of a roundtable about this, but I think what we found, and I'll let Leon elaborate a bit more with this game, was... when it came out in 1998, let's remember, Eurogames hadn't even really been discovered by the rest of the world. They were stuck in Europe. Settlers had come out in 95. This game came out in 98. Carcassonne came out in the year 2000. The same year that this came out, Reiner Knizia's Samurai came out that we have played, Garth. I don't know if you've played that one, Leon.
Yes.
And that is actually the top-ranked game from 1998, still in the Board Game Geek ranking. But... look, I think you have to say that games were different then, and we have perhaps been very, very spoiled by not only the huge number of games, but the huge variety of games, the themes in games.
I think you've also got to highlight how much the small box game has evolved from being a deck of cards into so much more these days. And that's, again, where, you know... not to put a finer point on it, I think that the collective feel we had is that this game felt like a game from 1998.
Yeah.
It felt like a game that you can see why there are great mechanics in there, you can see why it's a popular game, and you can see why Grail Games deservedly reprinted it and got it out there again. But there's just so many other games that will fill that 15-minute space that come in a small box that, for me, I'd have to put above this one.
Yeah, like the series where this game was reprinted, the four other so games we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Which was, what was it now?
Well, the Mike line where you've got 101 and 11sies, and you've got too many Cinderellas, and you've got Circus Flaccati, and the one more that I can't quite remember. I'm going to have to look at it.
That's okay, it's fine. The point being is that all those games, I think, are probably better than this one. This game was fine, but there's not heaps to it.
Yep. Matcha is the last one. The Japanese tea ceremony game.
Which has been winning awards.
Yeah, exactly right.
There's just not heaps to this game, and I just don't really know why. I can't imagine any circumstance where I would want to play this over any of those other type of games. Not saying, this is horrible, I'd never play it, but there's just really not much to it. Our explanation for it is probably twice as much as what you'd actually need to know when you start playing it.
Well, again, the good thing is this little rule book is 4 pages long. It takes you
and they're tiny pages.
And they're tiny pages because this whole box is about twice the size of a deck of cards.
Yep.
I think I can see where this game would appeal, and it is to your newer gamer. It's certainly to kids. Kids would love that art, and they would love the simplistic nature of this game. It does say on the BGG page, from 6 and above. So I can quite happily go and sit down and play this game with my son. He would pick it up after one round.
Yeah.
But again... is it fun for my son when I can play something else that I think he would enjoy better? Yeah, I don't know.
And this art as well, I think it's cool, that kind of the 1920s carnival type of art and stuff, but I think that's a rather divisive thing to say, because I guarantee if people did buy this for younger kids, some kids would probably be horrified by these pictures of normal looking humans with weird flea heads. We can sit here as adults and go, oh yeah, that's cool, we think that's fine, but the fact of the matter is that compared to the cartoony graphics it used to be, you've got to remember that's would probably put some people off as well.
Yeah, and clearly the original German version did have the cartoony art, did appeal to kids, did also appeal to a lot of serious gamers. But this then led me to have a brief chat via Twitter with David Harding from Grail Games, because, of course, we, as the Dice Man, have had this dilemma of, David has been fantastic. He sent us a copy of this game. We're going to go on air and say we didn't like it that much and sort of bag it out a bit. We feel a bit bad, but we also have to keep our professional game reviewer integrity intact, because if all of a sudden we keep getting on the radio and saying that every game we get sent for free is fantastic and the only ones we bag out are the ones we paid for ourselves, pretty soon you out there are going to stop listening. So, you know, he said in this game he recognises the elegance of the mechanics, and, you know, it is certainly an elegant mechanic, and you can see that mathy thing that Reiner Knizia does in so many games, yeah, where he has that balance, that number balance that gives you a few choices and a few different paths to victory. But as you said, Garth, I just look at so many other more fun games that play in the same amount of time that will draw in kids and adults, and I think, does this game need to be republished? Now, clearly the fact that it was a successful Kickstarter, it's now out in game stores and people are buying it, probably answers the question in that there's the diversity of gamers out there to enjoy it. For me, look, I had a little bit of fun with it, but, you know, if I've got a choice of this game or 10, 20 others, this is going to go to the bottom of the pile for me.
Yep, no, that's completely fair enough. And look, what we've probably done in the past is we've chosen not to talk about games that, yeah, we haven't liked, because we'd much rather be sitting here raving about this game and you've got to go and buy this game because it's awesome. But there comes a time, it comes in a time and a place where we've got to say that, look, thanks, but it's just not giving us the experience that we can get in other places.
Yeah, and it's the fact when it comes with to games these days especially is that there's a lot of good stuff out there. I've had people say to us, like, yeah, we love your show, but you always seem so positive about everything. Well, A, we're positive guys, which is a nice thing.
Stuff you, Leon.
Well, but B, you can kind of tell from a game's onset before you play it that if you're probably going to enjoy it or not, depending on the theme or the way it plays, and there's just so many good games out there, so we're more than happy to slag stuff off, as we've done in this episode, but we're always going to say the positives as well, because I can't remember, I don't even know if I've ever played a game where I've gone, everything about this is utter rubbish, I don't think we should have anything to do with it. There's always some positive to be had, and some game out there, every game out there that's ever been made is somebody's favourite game ever. So you just got to be a bit cautious when it comes to this thing, especially when we, as ourselves, we get things sent to us by publishers and stuff like that. We want that relationship to continue, but we will always look for the positive, but we'll always tell the truth.
So, look, a big shout-out to David from Grail Games. Thanks so much for sending this. We'll make sure it goes to a good home, no problem with that, and I'm sure that the people we give it to will appreciate it. And, of course, the same for GMT Games. We really appreciated that copy of Thunder Alley. If any game publishers, game printers, people are out there who are Kickstarter launchers and you want us to play your game, we would love to play it. We're happy to, and often we do give things away in competitions, even when we do like them, because we know that it's better for us to get the games out there rather than keep them all to ourselves, even though we'd love to. But we really appreciate that.
I think that's probably drawn a line in that. We might be able to play a quick song and then come back for the final part of the part of the show, or are we just going to keep going?
Oh, look, I think we should keep going because we've only got a few minutes left.
Oh, in that case, we don't have time to talk about Pandemic. Surely not.
No.
So let's focus on what we can talk about, which is our competition.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because this competition, our rule and make a rule competition, is going to be drawing to a close soon because we finally decided we should end it. Possibly because we might have to start another competition up in the not-too-distant future. But for everyone listening, our Rule and Make a Rule competition is going to be ending on the 15th of March, the Ides of March, for those of you playing at home. So we are going to have about another week's worth of this competition. We're going to give time for the podcast to get out. The way to enter this competition is to send us a video or an audio or just put in a little Facebook comment to the pinned post on this competition, just highlighting about your favourite house rule that you play with a game at home, something that makes the game a bit more interesting or funny or brings more people to the table, because there's been a lot of suggestions where people have changed the rules of games to bring their kids into it so that they're otherwise playing a game that just would be for your 15 plus, and bringing their kids who are 10 or 8 years into it, which I think is just a great way to open up this hobby to more and more and more people and to show the wonderful things that we have as gamers at our disposal. So just remember, Rule and Make have been incredibly generous. They're giving away every one of their published games so far, of which there are four. We haven't got Burger Up because that's still in the production phase at Kickstarter, and we'd love to have a go of that somewhere down the track. But we're getting Rise to Power out there to a lucky person. We're getting Entropy out there. We're getting Robots and Rockets. And we're getting Ninja Dojo Fight out there, which is awesome. That's exactly what our hobby is, and we love supporting these Australian publishers to be able to get that out there. So please, please, please keep putting in your entries. You've only got till the 15th of March.
Now, before we finish up, also want to thank all those people that have been liking on the Facebook page. We're crawling ever so slowly, but still crawling forwards. We haven't had many unlikers for a while, towards the 600 likes. Maybe that's something we might need to have a competition for. Who knows?
Yeah.
And I think, Leon, we've got a couple more new iTunes reviews.
Yes, we have got a few in the last couple of weeks or so, and they're always good to get, because that gets the show out to people all around the world that are just like, I want a podcast, I want it about board games, I love a board game. What have we got here? Oh, this Australian one's very positive. Oh, these guys are amazing. So we very much appreciate getting those out. And, so just keep sending them in as much as you can. And as the show and the Facebook page and everything grows and grows and grows, the more we get to do. We've had people ask us, like the videos that we've started to do, the one-minute-ish reviews, there's a lot of them we want to get into the pipeline. Even more videos of like us playing a whole gaming session and stuff like that. Our bonus episodes that we've put up in the past of playing things like Tales of the Arabian Nights and Sherlock Holmes and things like that.
I cannot wait to play the next round of Sherlock Holmes. Yeah. I'm sure we can actually get the crime solved this time.
Yeah, well, I was watching Sherlock Holmes on TV last night, and if Robert Downey Jr. can do it, surely we can too.
Yeah, well,
he's Iron Man.
Well, let's see how we go with that. But yeah, the point is that we're all growing this show and with all our fans together, and it's a great, great thing. And we're going to do a lot more. We've even been discussing today about possibly some merchandise getting out there in the world, but that's be quiet about that until we ask you to tell everybody you know. So yeah, so it's a really cool thing.
Now, just before we go, there was an announcement only made yesterday about BorderCon, which we are going to. Right. We are on that plane, baby. They have sold out over 90% of their tickets, and that was about 24 hours ago. So there are not many seats left because there are only 200 tickets, and we take up at least 20 of them, Mark. No, I'm only kidding. We only take up three. But, yeah, please, 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 if you are even half considering getting to BorderCon, jump onto their website, buy yourself some ticket. If you need to scalp it later on because you can't go, then don't do that because scalping's bad, but give it to a friend. But you got to get in there quickly because even though it's in June and it's only March, the seats are going.
Now, speaking of June, we're off to our local public house because we've got a certain pandemic legacy game to play.
We sure do.
Where it's June in the world, and we can't talk about anything else about that, but we're going to try and make some time next time to talk to you about pandemic legacy because there's so much to talk about.
Yes.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll join you again next week. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.